Chapter 6. "I found it," Mac declares, and several people in the room jolt back to consciousness. It's late Wednesday, and they're surrounded by discarded Chinese food containers, and half the pack is asleep. Styles is immediately next to Mac, leaning over her shoulder to see what she found. "Drake purchased a defunct state prison in 2013. "Hot damn," Styles says. Erica yawns and gets up, shifting back to her human form as she does so. Research is not Erica's forte. "So while most of the hunters looked on the prisons as a bad thing and started a campaign to stop using them, Drake took it as a how-to guide?" "That'd be my guess," Max says. "There's other payments here he's made to different contractors, all deducted off his taxes as work-related, which, okay, technically they were, if we want to split hairs." "I'll leave that to the IRS, Styles says. "Okay, where are we looking?" "It's right on the border between Ohio and West Virginia," Max says. "Apparently it closed down in 2002 because of concerns about asbestos. The government dithered around for a while about whether or not it was worth doing renovations or whether they should just bulldoze it and put something else there. They tried to get people to buy it. Prison privatization is a whole other problem I could talk about at some length. But nobody bit until suddenly, in 2013, it was sold to Drake." "How far?" Styles asks. Mac is already typing. "About 4 hours. "Blech," Styles says. "Do we actually need to go there?" Scott asks. "It's not like we can stage a jailbreak. I mean, not with our current resources. Do you have any idea what the others would say to us if we attacked a jail without them?"
"Lydia would use words we don't even know, and it would be very uncomfortable," Erica agrees.
Styles nods.
"I want to scope the place out, though. I mean, if he's actually imprisoning werewolves and then sicking them on Wednesday's territory, that's kind of important."
"We'll go," Ray says. "Y'all want to be back at the hotel tonight, or Drake's spies will report you back to him, right? But no one's watching us." Styles considers for a minute. He doesn't like it. There's always going to be a small part of himself that dislikes leaving things to other people. But Ray has as much of a stake in this as he does, and possibly more. "Okay," he says, "but recon only. Do not make a move or you'll blow the whole thing. Just get me some pictures and stuff."
"Got it," Ray says. "I'll drop y'all off at your car on the way."
"Okay," Styles says. He has to hope that Drake's bug doesn't include a GPS tracker, because otherwise he'll be wondering what the hell they were doing at Mammoth Cave for 8 hours. He's pretty sure that the cave tour doesn't take that long, but there's only so much he can plan for.
"And when you've gotten the intel, text me. Don't call me."
"Right, ears everywhere."
They head back to the hotel, and Styles is already thinking about how he's going to sleep a wink while he's waiting to hear. They make sure to enter the lobby loudly, talking about how much fun they had hiking around, to make sure that Drake's spies see them. Then they settle back down in the hotel room. It's late, and they all agree to pack it in for the night. By now, Styles has a variety of information, and he starts sifting through it. He wants to focus on the Arnell murder, mostly because it was more recent. Everything that happened with the Stojankovic family was so long ago now that it would be more difficult to uncover the truth. Besides, unless Dragon is willing to talk to him, and Styles will be surprised if he is, then that's a dead end anyway. The first file case he pulls up is only useless for ruling out as a possibility. The unrelated murder in the woods that Betty and Curtis had gone to investigate is well and truly unrelated. Two men who ran a business together had gotten in an argument about money. One man killed the other, and then dumped his body in the woods. There was DNA evidence. The man had been convicted and given a life sentence, and in fact had died in prison about 2 years earlier. There's absolutely nothing useful there, so Styles pushes that aside. The information about the car is relatively useless. He's a halfway decent mechanic. He would have to be, driving a Jeep that was built in the 80s. So although it's possible that the transmission problems that the Arnells had could have been due to sabotage, it's also possible that it was genuine car trouble. Without seeing the remains of the engine, there was no way to know. And the police hadn't looked at the engine. It had clearly never occurred to them that the car trouble might have been the first step in a brutal double homicide. That leaves him with Patterson, which is the lead he wanted to follow anyway. But it isn't exactly a rare name. There are almost 4,000 people named John Patterson in the United States. He's going to have to narrow it down. After a few minutes of thought, he texts Ravinder. You up? Ravinder never responds as quickly as Justin does, because he wasn't raised on a cell phone the same way. About 5 minutes pass before Ravinder replies with,
Yes, we're in Australia. Do you need something?
Gonna call you, Styles texts back. Then he walks over to the bed where Derek is sleeping, curled up in his wolf form. He can't make the call from their room, but if he wanders off by himself, the others will, rightfully, have apoplexy. He gives Derek a gentle shake. Derek opens one eye and shows his teeth. Styles puts a finger over his lips, then beckons for Derek to follow him, and points to a pile of clothes Derek left in a corner. Derek heaves a sigh, but then shifts and climbs out of bed. He quickly gets dressed and then follows Styles out of the hotel room. It's 2 a.m, and the halls are empty and silent. As long as he avoids the lobby, nobody will see them leave. He goes down a back stairwell and out into the parking lot.
What are we doing?
Derek asks, yawning and stretching. Making a call without being overheard, Styles says, tapping the screen of his phone. Ravinder picks up on the first ring.
Namaste, Styles.
Namaste, Styles replies. Got a few questions about an alpha that died in 2009, if you have a minute.
That was quite some time ago, Ravinder says. I don't know how much help I can be.
Yeah, I know, Styles says, because he also knows that Ravinder has a memory like a steel trap. He remembers every alpha that they ever tested. His name was John Patterson. It would have been in Kentucky or at least America somewhere.
The name is unfamiliar, Ravinder says. I don't believe we ever did a trial for him.
Styles grimaces. Okay, I need background information. You guys always just show up when a new alpha pops up. How? Do you have, like, alpha radar or something? At this, Ravinder chuckles.
No, there's a network of sorcerers that we use. They monitor the... how can I put this? The natural flow of power. I confess I don't know exactly how it works. So suffice to say, when one alpha dies and transfers his power to another, they're aware of this. And then they notify us. It used to be very dramatic and old-fashioned. Have you seen the Lord of the Rings movies?
Dude, I cosplayed as Frodo when I was a freshman in high school, Styles says. Don't insult me.
Ravinder is still laughing. Their system for notifying us reminded me very much of the beacons of Amon Din, up until Justin took over. And he insisted that they get with the 21st century and start texting him, which they did, quite grumpily, I might add.
Okay, but they don't give you all the information, do they? Styles asks. Like, when you guys came to test me, you knew where I was, but you didn't know who I was. Callie expected it to be Derek and was surprised when it wasn't.
That is correct, Ravinder says. All they can tell us is the location. From there, we have to follow our own senses.
So, if someone has turned into an alpha in, say, Canada, Styles says, and then immediately got on a plane to Hawaii,
we would have a very difficult time locating them.
This is true, Ravinder says. And some alphas have indeed been able to avoid the trial that way, although generally speaking, we track them down eventually. Well, shit, that doesn't help me at all, Styles says, because I know this guy's name, but nothing about when or where he became an alpha. That's precisely the information that I need. But will you do me a favor? I have a hunch that this guy became an alpha right before he stirred up the shit that I'm investigating. So will you ask your beacon lighters if anyone became an alpha in early 2009 that you guys then didn't test for whatever reason?
They're not precisely talkative, Ravinder says, but I will ask.
Thanks. Text me the info if you would. I'm being watched and overheard most of the time.
Very well,
There's some noise in the background. Then he says,
Cora sends her love, and she is absolutely not asking for more of your sugar cookies. Styles grins. I'll see what I can do about not sending more, he says. Derek leans over and says, I love you, Cora. Because he always does. Anytime Styles calls anyone in the Alpha Pack, he knows that she'll overhear it on her end and will probably scowl tremendously. Styles says goodbye and hangs up, and then yawns, standing there for a few moments without speaking. You should get some sleep, Derek says. Yeah, but I won't until I hear from Ray, and hopefully that'll be soon, Styles says. Then I can catch a few hours. I'll work on the Stoyankovic case for a little while, I guess. Derek growls at him, but doesn't actively protest. They enter the room as quietly as possible, and he curls up at Styles' feet while Styles gets back to work. Just past 3, Styles gets a series of texts from Ray.
Prison definitely in use, the first one says. Lots of heartbeats, too many to count. Could smell a few non-wolf creatures. Definitely a hag, maybe a troll or an ogre. Took pictures. What now?
Styles breathes a sigh of relief that Ray obeyed his orders.
I'll look at them tomorrow, he says. Gonna get some sleep. You should too.
He futzes on Google for a minute, then adds,
pick us up tomorrow, Barren River Lake State Park. 11 a.m.? Okay,
is Ray's reply. It won't give him a lot of time to sleep after he drives back from the prison, but he'll get a few hours, which is better than nothing. Styles sheds his clothes and crawls into bed. He's asleep within minutes. I always wanted to go to a lake in Kentucky in the middle of winter, Scott says the next morning, as Styles is telling them all the plan for the day. Glad I'm gonna cross that off my bucket list.
Don't be such a baby, Styles tells him, amused. It'll be good for all of us to get a chance to run around and burn off some energy. Anyway, I'm not driving 4 hours to go to St. Louis. That's too far for my taste. You can go there on your own sometime.
It's really not that great, Derek says. Seriously, it's a big arch. Whoop-de-freaking-do. Erica snickers, and Styles shepherds the pack out of the hotel room and to the car. It's mid-morning, only 10 a.m., so they have plenty of time. He lets Scott drive so he can go over the dossier that Veronica compiled him on Martin Drake. It's actually fascinating reading. Drake is a real American success story. He was born into a low-income family in Pennsylvania and maintained straight A's while working at their restaurant. He got into hunting when he was in high school, after some deep-dwelling monster had killed several miners from their town. He had been as good at that as he was at everything else. In his second year of college, he had been diagnosed with leukemia and had to put the hunting career on hold while he went through treatment. He went into remission, graduated with a 4.0 GPA, and joined up with the Stoyankovic family as soon as he graduated. He'd been more of a manager than an actual hunter, facilitating weapons transfers, sweeping things under rugs, and securing financial support. Styles has to wonder exactly how much of the perfect grades and rise to stardom had to do with underhanded behavior, since Drake clearly has no problem with that. But it's all in the distant past, and probably unimportant. He has ample proof of the kind of person Drake is without having to dig for it. So the story is interesting, but it doesn't really help him. It's not until they're on the beach and they can be assured that nobody can overhear them that he says, okay, guys, here's the plan. Ray's confirmed that Drake does in fact have a prison. We need to prove that he's using it to hold werewolves until he can coerce them to attack Arnell Lands. And what's the easiest way to do that? Derek sighs. Erica groans. Mac blinks and then half raises her hand and says, get attacked? Got it in one, Styles says. So, once we've talked to Ray, we're going back to our hotel room. We're going to tell Drake's little bugs that we're going to go talk to Grandma Arnell about how we suspect that Drake has something to do with Betty and Curtis's death. No way will he allow us to do that. He'll send someone after us for sure. We're going to meet Ray at his place because that will give us a nice isolated spot for him to send someone to attack and then go to the Arnells once it's late enough that the little kids will be in bed.
because we need to give him time to get someone here from West Virginia.
Jesus, Styles,
Derek mutters, but then lifts his hands in surrender because he knows that the group of them are more than adequate to take on a few werewolves. Erica isn't so sure. What if he sends an ogre or something? Ogres are weak at the knees and ankles, Allison says. All that weight. Styles gestures to Allison and says, good thing we have an expert hunter with us. Erica rolls her eyes. But I want to script this carefully. Adlib will get us caught, so we are going to plan every detail. When dealing with Martin Drake, pretend you're dealing with me. A sociopathic, power-hungry version of me.
Gotta get all our ducks in a row, Scott agrees, nodding.
Exactly. In the meantime, I'm still waiting to hear from Ravender, and Chris was going to see if he could track down Dragon and get him to talk to me. So we have plenty of other stuff to do. Let's get to work. Ray is 100% not sure that setting themselves up to get attacked is the best plan. But after an hour going over the photographs he's gotten of the facility, they all agree that there's absolutely no way that they're going to be able to stage a jailbreak. If they're going to talk to someone Drake has kept imprisoned, this is how to do it. They spend an hour or so planning, then head back to Ray's place so they can rig it up with some booby traps and defensive measures. He's gathered his pack there, and they're all given strict instructions to stay inside, lest they accidentally blow themselves up. That being accomplished, it's about 3 o'clock when they get back to the hotel room. At that point, Styles pretends to take a phone call. He makes sure to keep it vague, a lot of, uh-huh, and that's interesting. Then he hangs up.
What was that about?
Derek asks. Well, I asked a couple of people to look into Martin Drake for me, Styles says. I mean, regardless of whether or not Wednesday is going to be of any help at all, I still don't like the idea of this marriage. If Drake keeps taking territory like this, it's going to be trouble for everyone in the end. Yeah, because that's our business, Erica says. Styles shrugs. When have I ever confined myself to things that are my business? He asks, and she laughs. Anyway, I think Drake has had designs on this territory for years. I had a hunch that Betty and Curtis Arnell's deaths might not have been accidental. Well, they were killed by an alpha werewolf, so... Allison says. Styles waves that aside. Okay, yes, but my point is, where the fuck did he come from? A beta werewolf might look for an alpha to kill, so he could take over their pack, but alphas generally don't move around and take over other packs. I think Patterson has some ties back to Drake, so I have people looking into it for me. He has to be careful here, because they don't know what Patterson's ties to Drake were. I want to go talk to Wednesday's grandmother. She might know more about it. But what's the point? Allison asks. Say Drake did have Wednesday's parents killed. That was 6 years ago. Even if we can prove it, what difference would it make? Drake's gotten his hooks in Wednesday somehow, Styles says. Blackmail or extortion or something. Maybe we can blackmail him back. Yeah, I guess. Allison sounds skeptical. Okay, what's your plan? I don't want to go right now, Styles says. There's kids there. Let's wait until tonight. And I want to go talk to the pack's current alpha. He knows more about what happened back then. I emailed him back when we came here, so I have his address. We'll talk to him and come up with a plan. I think he knows Mrs. Arnell, so maybe he can get us an in.
Sounds good, Derek says, and they troop back out of the hotel room.
And now we wait, Styles says under his breath. Styles hates waiting. He's extremely bad at it. Always has been. His version of waiting generally comes down to pace around, gesture frenetically, and rack his brains for the smallest clue he might have missed. It also generally results in baking, which is, at least, about to make him extremely popular with Ray's pack. His hands are in cookie dough when his phone buzzes, and Derek reaches over and takes it out of Styles' back pocket.
Text from Ravender, he says. Your hunch was right. The beacons of Gondor confirm that an alpha was made in January of 2009, somewhere in Virginia. There's a pause, and the phone buzzes again.
Ravender doesn't remember ever testing an alpha by the name of John Patterson, but he does remember testing Ray, and that was in April of the same year. Stiles nods. So Patterson became an alpha pretty much right before he showed up here. It does seem like he became an alpha for the express purpose of coming down here and stirring shit up. But that still doesn't tie him to Drake, Allison says. It's purely circumstantial. No, you're right, Stiles says. And I won't be able to tie him to Drake until I can track down more info on him. But I have no idea how to do that. It's just too common a name. Derek grimaces. He looks at Ray and says, You don't happen to have anything of his, do you? Hell no, Ray says. We got rid of all his stuff. Burned it in a big-ass bonfire. Didn't exactly think we'd need it. What happened to his body? Stiles asks, although it's without much hope. It would take a very special set of circumstances to get any evidence off a body that was 6 years old. Brought the head to Lucy, like I told you, Ray says. Burned the rest. Shit, Stiles says. That's not helpful. Okay, did he have another place he lived, or did he have a job while he was here? Man, he didn't tell us stuff like that, Ray says. We were the enemy and he knew it. We all lived in this huge house up north of here, by 20, 30 miles maybe. I didn't want to stay there afterwards, so we took off. But it didn't belong to Patterson. It was Shosh's. I don't know what happened to it after we left, but there won't be any paperwork that ties it to Patterson. What about his car? Sketch pipes up from where he's been greedily eyeing the cookie dough. Do you still have it? Stiles asks, surprised. Sketch snorts. No, but can't you look it up by plate number? Well, sure, if you happen to have a picture or something. Don't need it, Sketch says. I know it. He sees Stiles' skeptical look and laughs. Patterson was a smug, rich prick. He drove a BMW and the plate read MYBMR. My Beamer. Put that in front of a poor, resentful 12-year-old. Ain't no way he'll be forgetting it anytime soon. Sketch, you're brilliant, Stiles says. He looks down at his sticky hands and says, Mac, I'm on it, she says, sitting down with her laptop. 2 minutes later, while Stiles is finishing scooping the first set of cookies, she says, Well, it's a good thing we didn't perseverate on the name, because it was totally false. John Patterson was actually Jesse Pendleton. Oh my God! Stiles nearly knocks the cookie sheet off the counter. I know that name. He's in the Hunter app. We bothered to list someone who died 6 years ago? Allison asks, surprised. I don't think we knew he was dead, Stiles says. He's itching to reach for his phone, but Derek is already on it. You're right. He's listed as being MIA, Derek says. We listed anyone MIA because we didn't know if they might pop up again, Stiles says. Where's he from? Derek's mouth curves in a grimace. Pennsylvania. He's listed as being one of Stoddard's guys. He might have worked for Stoddard, but I bet he knew Drake, Stiles says. He grew up in Pennsylvania. I bet they worked together before Drake cut south to work for the Stoyankovics. Okay, it's not solid, but it's certainly suggestive. What else can we get on him? Well, public records aren't particularly compelling. But Ray, you want to come over here and verify that it's the same guy? Mac asks. Ray nods and heads over. He looks over her shoulder at the driver's license picture that she's displaying, and his jaw ticks. Yeah, he says. That's Patterson. Okay, Mac is still typing. Born Wilkes-Barre in 1968. Graduated high school, went to college in Philadelphia. Temple University? Stiles interrupts. That's where Drake went. Nope, sorry, UPenn. Mac keeps typing. Did 2 years there but didn't graduate. Married in 1992, divorced 1995. No kids. Worked for, hey, this is interesting, the Corrections Department in Ohio. Last known address in Akron. Wow, what a pile of useless, Erica says. No, that's not useless at all, Stiles says. Corrections officers do not get paid enough to
afford a beamer with vanity plates, which means he was definitely making money under the table. And Drake is the one who wants to turn hunting into a for-profit industry. He slides one sheet of cookies into the oven and starts prepping the next. Actually, if you think about it, the way he's been slowly picking away at the Arnell territory is basically the same thing. Capture werewolves, coordinate attacks, convince people they need your help, and you can charge an arm and a leg for it.
It's a classic protection racket, Derek says, nodding. Just with werewolves instead of mobsters.
Okay, but we still need it to be more solid, Allison says. If we're going to turn the hunters against Drake, we need really compelling evidence.
Do we? Scott asks. I thought they already hated him.
Yeah, they do, but...
Styles remembers that he can't mention Wednesday's baby at the last second. But Wednesday was consorting with werewolves, and they won't look kindly on that, either.
And let's not forget that these hunters might hate Drake, but they also hate me. Well, a lot of them, anyway. They won't take my word on this. We need proof.
Derek's head comes up suddenly.
That'll have to wait, he says. We've got company.